Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire. And this is USA Today Lions Wire's official podcast. It's a fine day today. Excellent day. Lions coming off of a big win. 26-10 dismantling of the New England Patriots that I'm sure everybody listening watched. Because that would be kind of odd if they didn't watch it.
And dismantling is an accurate word.
I know. That's too much of a superlative, you know. I hope we're not putting too much emphasis on winning this game. It's one game. Patriots look bad, poorly prepared, a lot of guys out. But it's a win. And we're 1-2. A lot better than 0-3. We don't have to go through promising guys at the combine in week four because the season is salvageable.
Yeah, I think the adjective I used the most was convincing. It was a very convincing win. And I've tried to expand on that, but I don't think I used yours yet. Decisive is another good one.
Yeah, it was a decisive win, although there was some dicey moments at the beginning of the second half.
Sure.
But I guess we'll wait and hit those in a minute.
Yeah.
Because as always, we'll start with the injury news. Number one, Ziggy. Shoulder injury. Out Wednesday and Thursday in practice. Doesn't look good for Sunday. On the injury report, my streak stays alive.
Yeah, and actually, he was limited last week. And expected to play, then didn't play, and now is out, and that is a regression. And whenever you have a regression like that, that usually indicates a setback. And so now everything's up in the air. It's very possible he is limited tomorrow and can play on Sunday, but it's also very possible that he is out for an extended period of time. We don't really know what's going on with him exactly, but being out this week is not good.
And also tight end Michael Roberts, who happily for you caught a touchdown pass back in week two. He's been out Wednesday and Thursday. He's got a knee, as Al Michaels would say.
Yeah, from what you can read with the tea leaves, is he hurt himself in Friday's practice last week, was inactive for the game, and then this week he gets the out label, which means that something happened last Friday, and it happened when we didn't have access to the team. And then the team makes a move to add a practice squad player, another tight end, which we'll get to in a second. And that kind of indication is, again, doesn't, if you read the tea leaves, not really good news for Michael Roberts. He, with him not being out and then them signing another guy, even if though it's only in the practice squad, that still is usually means this could be a injury that takes some time.
There's a lot of reading the tea leaves,
sure,
in the game of football.
Yeah, for sure.
There's,
especially
there's not.
Injuries. Well,
what percentage of people are going to know what reading the tea leaves? All right. Next, TJ Lang, who returned to 97-1 after the Lions win on Tuesday, but limited in practice Wednesday, Thursday.
And he was limited all last week, too, and he was still able to play. You know, you could tell after the plays, especially in the second half, he was very slow to get up. And you could tell he was, you know, still battling that back injury. But he played 100% of the snaps, and he seems to be on track to keep going again, which is good news.
All right. Another big one along the offensive line. Frank Ragnow with his own knee injury. Not practicing Wednesday, limited on Thursday.
No, he did. He practiced Thursday and then wasn't on the injury report at all on Wednesday.
Meaning not. Okay.
He wasn't on the injury report. Sorry, my notes are.
Is this the Michael Scott?
Scribbly.
Like, I made it green to mean go ahead and not talk about it.
Yeah, this was poor note taking on my part there. Yeah, no, Ragnar was not on the injury report at all in any fashion on Wednesday. Came up limited today, which means he probably got hurt today. If he got hurt yesterday, it would be limited yesterday. But limited today means he probably got a little knee twinge thing, and so it's kind of hard to tell exactly what's going on with that. Too early to tell. We'll know a little bit more tomorrow. If he's limited again tomorrow, That's a pretty good indicator. He has a good chance of suiting up on Sunday. If he's out tomorrow, then it's time to worry a little bit.
Finally, another offensive lineman, Andrew Donnell, with his knee, limited Wednesday, full participant Thursday.
Yeah, he was he practiced once before going on the injury report, and then he was out all of the last couple of weeks, came back in limited fashion on Wednesday, which was an improvement, full on Thursday, which is another improvement. So he's at least headed in the right direction. I still would expect him to be in an active on Sunday just because he's still new to the system. But you got to remember, this is a guy that the Lions liked and they used a waiver claim on in order to get him. But Tyrell Crosby is ahead of him, and he's been active but hasn't seen the field yet in his NFL career, even though he's been active all 3 weeks. So I still feel like Donnell's, he's still far away in the pecking order here.
Worth noting, the Lions only dressed 7 offensive linemen on Sunday night.
That's pretty typical, and only 6 of them played. So it's not uncommon.
It's what we want.
Yeah, 100%. That's what we want.
All right. Transactions, first a ho-hum, tight end Jerome Cunningham added to the practice squad.
There's a guy who's bounced around 3 different teams in the NFL, in between the practice squad and the NFL roster for the last 5 seasons. So he's a body to come in, he's worth a look, and gives them a depth option while Michael Roberts is dealing with his knee injury.
All right, got a couple of fellas waived, one from the Lions, one worth noting. First one, Donnell Pumphrey, former San Diego State running back and Nick Bawden teammate, released from the practice squad.
Yeah, they needed to make room for Cunningham, and so Pumphrey in a deep running back room was the guy who got the X. I mean, look, you've got Abdullah who hasn't played a snap yet, and he's behind Abdullah. So he was a guy who was just not in the right spot as far as the depth chart.
And the next guy, potentially back in the Lions universe over the next few weeks, the Panthers have cut Corey Robinson, and there's significance to that.
Yeah, when they traded him away, they traded him to the Panthers for a 7th round 2020 pick. And it was a conditional draft pick based on his playing time. And the condition was, from what we can understand, is if he played 4 games during the regular season for the Panthers would then owe him a 7th round pick. He played 3, and then they cut him. So that means that 7th round pick likely reverts back to the Panthers. And, Robinson apparently was a guy they were going to cut anyways. So we'll see if he ends up. Maybe he's better than Donnell for what the Lions want. But, now that Donnell's healthy, we'll see what he can do. And Robinson is definitely he's out in that free agent market again. And unfortunately, the Lions will probably not compensate that pick.
Bo Nunn is still out there?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so keep our eye on that.
Mihalik and all these other guys.
Dan Skipper.
Yeah, I think he is. I'd have to double check on him, but yeah.
All right, next up, the 5 takeaways from the Patriots game. Number 1, Kerryon Johnson, no surprise there. Finally off the schneid of the lack of 100-yard rushers.
Yay.
Now back onto the schneid of back-to-back 100-yard rushers.
So. Kerryon looked sharp. I thought he was... watching live, clearly the better back. And he was getting the same opportunities that Blunt was. And I just thought
he was making 16 carries.
They did. And I just thought like Kerryon was making the majority of them, the majority of his opportunities. Now, Kerryon did outsnap Blunt 33-26. So he did get a few more carries in at the end. Plus that last series, I really think they didn't want to put Kerryon out there in case he took a loss and they didn't want to go back under that 100. So that's another 3 snaps that went to Blunt that might have gone to Kerryon in other circumstances. But, he got that 100, which is nice because this will hopefully be the last time we have to talk about this. But
For at least another 4 years.
But you know what? He looked sharp, like I said, in the game. And on the rewatch, you could really tell like how his vision and how his explosion just separate him from the rest of the backs in the Lions' backfield, and really some of the other backs in the league as well. He's really got an impressive skill set. The thing that really impressed me the most about Kerryon is that he's talked about the fact that he didn't have the agility to make cuts that other more elusive running backs were able to make. So he had to compensate with that by being able to come up with an arsenal of moves in order to adjust. And so one of these moves was this jump cut. And really the, what makes his jump cut unique is that when most people make the jump cut, they kind of throttle down their speed. And with Kerryon, he doesn't. His jump cut happens at full speed, and he's able to go from zero to 60 miles an hour really rapidly. And that's a huge benefit. Like, that's what makes his jump cut really so successful. Whereas, you know, a guy like Amir or Theo or even Blunt, as we saw, it really just... it takes away some of their momentum, whereas Kerryon, he actually uses it to parlays that into more yards, and the kid's got so much power in his lower body. It's just it's really fun to watch him, and excited to see what he can do in the upcoming games and upcoming years.
All right, next up, the interior linemen Ragnow, Glasgow, and Lang, and how they dominated the line of scrimmage and owned the A gap. And for anybody who didn't know, they weren't listening with the sound on because Chris Collinsworth was rather pleased with the Lions' interior line.
Yeah, no, these holes that Glasgow and Ragnow, they went left A-gap hard a lot. That's the space in between the left guard and the center. And, man, they just kept attacking it. And both Ragnow and Glasgow have the athletic ability to get inside and then seal off walls, and it was impressive. And what they were able to do, the holes that they were able to create, was it's stuff that you typically only see in college, and we definitely haven't seen in the Lions, and I can't even remember how long. But it was a very impressive game plan, very impressive execution. They got Ragnow on linebackers, which he really just found a way to just, once he latched a hold of them, they were done. And then Lang, we can't, like, you know, gloss over what Lang did. Lang controlled the backside on run plays. He was sometimes asked to release and go to the second level, and then he was clearing second level blocks for them. Lang was really more of a movement guy and a safety valve, whereas Glasgow and Ragnow were really like the separators in the C there. So all three together, though, very impressive. I thought Wagner looked good too. I thought Decker still continues to kind of have some hiccups, but wasn't a lot to criticize from that O-line.
All right, next up, run defense is identifying their gaps. New England rushed for 89 yards on Sunday night, but only on 19 carries. Also, the Lions still ranked 32nd in run defense.
Yeah, because they got gashed so hard early. Like, that's
significant.
Not, yeah, it's going to take a long time for them to get out of that 32nd hole because of what they did early. But it was almost like the light went on. We saw gaps that they were losing in the first two games that they were filling in this game. We saw Hand make some plays early. We saw Ricky Jean-Francois make some plays in the middle, and we saw Ashawn Robinson make some plays late. So we saw really some good production from the interior, despite the fact that the actual defensive tackles weren't even used as frequent as they were in the first two games, but they showed up when they were on the field. So they're getting better. There's still problems, and we're really going to get tested this week, but the fact that they were figuring out where things were going and making the right reads is very encouraging.
All right, number four, coverage sacks. The team ranks third in the NFL with 10, which is somewhat significant because if you extrapolate it over 16 games, we'd be at 53.3, which is a lot of sacks.
Yeah.
These things usually don't keep up.
And nine of those sacks come from linebackers too, which is really what we talked about during the preseason when we were discussing the fact that they're scheming pressure, and they were going to find a way to scheme pressure. They weren't showing it in the preseason, and we just kept saying, you know, be patient. They're going to scheme it. Well, this is how they're scheming it. They're using their bodies up front to occupy, and then they're getting their linebackers free. The big part, though, about scheming and the way that they're approaching is that you have to have good coverage, and the Lions secondary is operating at a very high level right now, despite the fact that they've had some struggles at the number two corner spot. The safeties have been playing well. Darius Slay has been playing well. And I believe they are the number one coverage unit right now in the NFL.
Yeah, I believe I heard that today.
So, and you know, some of that you have to, when you read numbers, you have to look at the fact that they're number one in coverage. Some of that is because
they're last in rush defense.
Because teams are running on them. Exactly. No, and that's right. So there's a healthy medium in between, right? And so, yes, the coverage units have looked good. They looked good on Sunday, but they did struggle at the beginning, just like the run defense struggled. But the teams were running on them more than passing. Therefore, it kind of helps amp the numbers for the passing defense. But doesn't discount the fact that they are doing so well in coverage right now that they're finding ways to generate sacks. And those sacks weren't just this game. They've had sacks equally amongst all three games, and a lot of those have been because the coverage has been good.
All right, quick quiz for you.
Mm-hmm.
32nd in rush defense, number one in pass defense. When you put those two together, where do you think they rank in the NFL? Three games, small samples.
Probably between 16 and 20.
Seven.
Oh, wow.
They're seventh overall in total defense.
Wow.
Yep. That's and much they only trail the LA Rams by 16 yards.
Wow.
So. No, yeah, I find that surprising, too. That's how good they've been against the pass.
Yeah. Well, look, they held Brady to, what, 133 yards or something ridiculous like that? Like, that's only the second time. That's the second lowest total Brady's had in 18 years in the NFL. And it's the lowest he's ever thrown in a dome. So, the pass defense, it's we've talked about it, you know, being really the strength of the defense. Even though they have some struggles, overall as a unit, they're playing well. And that's been a big difference.
All right. And the number one reason why all this happened, and the most shocking reason of them all, the Lions outcoached the Pats.
Yeah, clearly. And that's really what you're hanging your hat on, I think, on this game. Is you're saying, this is probably the greatest NFL coach in our generation on the other side of the field, and your rookie coach, granted, he knows them, but Belichick also knows Patricia. Like, that's a part that there's a lot of people saying, well, we'll see how Patricia does when faces someone that he doesn't know so well. Well, Belichick knows Patricia just as well as Patricia knows Belichick. Like, they both know each other. It wasn't just a walk in the park here for Patricia because he knew what was going on. The Patriots still find a way to be successful, and this has been a year in, year out type thing. So you have to credit Patricia for his plan, and he had a good defensive scheme, and he understood how to approach Tom Brady and how to – basically their scheme was take Gronk out of the picture and make Tom go to other guys. And when you double-team Gronk, and then you put Darius Slay out on another receiver, and if the defensive line and linebackers are stopping the run, there's not a lot of places to go. And that's really what we saw. And then Brady was uncharacteristically off as well, so I don't want to overlook that. But there was a good defensive plan. On the opposite side of the ball, though, this was probably Jim Bob Cooter's best game ever.
Look at him performing under pressure. Escape, go.
You know, we've talked about Cooter needing time to grow into the offensive coordinator role and how now is the time he really should be good at it. And he definitely didn't look good at it in the first couple of games. In the first game, for sure. Second game got a lot better. This game, man, he was setting stuff up left and right. And when you're having success on the ground, it allows your offensive coordinator to set stuff up. When you're finding success on third and one in the run game, you can then play action to Golden Tate for 15 yards on a third and one. When you're having success in the run game on first down, you can play action and then go to Kenny Golladay for a touchdown. You can play action and go to Marvin Jones for a touchdown. And so there's so many things that help you as an offensive coordinator, and execution is the biggest one. And when you're executing in the run game at the clip that they were, it allowed Cooter to do stuff. And so, and we saw him do it. It wasn't just one or two things. There was several things where he just said, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to set you up, and then pull the covers on you. And then, boom, he was getting big chunks of yards and being impactful. They controlled the game 2-1 in time of possession. And that doesn't happen.
Stunning. Unless
it's absolutely stunning. And so lots of credit to Jim Bob Cooter, because he was a guy who we took shots at in the first couple of weeks for his vanilla play calling. But, man, he had a plan. His plan worked, not just in the first half, but when the Patriots made adjustments and Cooter made adjustments, it still worked, and that was really when they found success. They out-coached Patriots hands down.
All right, talk a little bit about the scene in the post-game locker room.
Yeah, you know, look, I don't know if I'm hoping most people have seen it, because it's really made its way around there. But there was a lot of collaboration and a lot of happiness amongst the players and the fans, and it should really put to bed all of the Coach Patricia has lost a team type rumors that have been out there. And then Patricia and then guys in the locker room talked about the impact of the fans. That place was extraordinarily loud, and I was very impressed from start to finish how loud the fans were, even through commercial breaks, chanting and cheering, and it was an overall impressive. It was a very neat post-game scene behind the scenes. So a lot of cool stuff going on.
So when you want to move on to the Cowboys, talk a little bit about the Dallas Cowboys.
Can we just real fast? Just super
sure.
Fast, super
no,
fast.
We can go back.
That's just. I just want to talk about the offensive line.
Talk about that line.
They're getting
a few more minutes on that line.
They're getting a lot of recognition. Pro Football Focus ranked them fifth. Football Outsiders ranked them as they're the. If you're not familiar with Football Outsiders, they do adjusted stats, and they counted the Lions as having the number one pass blocking offensive line in the league. They've only allowed a sack on 2% of dropbacks. That's one in every 50. They're ninth in the league in run blocking. There's one of only five teams in the NFL that ranks in the top 10 in both categories. And we've talked about this team and this offensive line having the potential to be a top five, top 10 team. Well, right now, that's where they are. This is a top 10 unit that's playing at a top five level at times. And when you look at that, I mean, this is a offensive line that if they can stay healthy, and we go back to like that what we started the podcast with the injury report, if they can stay healthy, this line can really control what's going on, you know, in the game.
Okay, now we're going to move on to the Dallas Cowboys.
Yep.
All right. First off, they'll be playing in Cowboy Stadium down, or is it AT&T Stadium now?
Oh, Jerry World. That's all.
Jerry
I know
World
it.
Down in Arlington, Texas. The game is at 1 p.m. on Sunday afternoon.
Yay.
The Cowboys are favored by 3 points in Vegas. Not a surprise there.
No.
The referee will be Walt Coleman, who only averages 13.3 penalties per game, which is a solid 1.3 below the NFL average for head officials. In the broadcast booth, we have a lower-ranked Fox crew of Kevin Burkhart and Charles Davis. We remember Davis does a lot of Lions games, and yeah. In the past on the Big Ten Network, we'd see him do a lot of Spartan and Wolverine games. And Eric, are the Lions going to be wearing silver or gray on Sunday?
My inside sources are telling me that it's color rush, so it should be grays.
So the Cowboys wear white
yep.
for their color rush, right?
I don't know.
So this is going to be question. Like a weird-looking game.
It very well could be. Maybe they'll do an alteration to maybe the pants or something, but this is, I was told, to expect color rush.
Right, so we're going to be looking for the gray.
Yep.
And sadly, you know, Kevin Burkhart and Charles Davis, I felt this would be a Buck Aikman game.
Yeah.
Because you think they would do at least six Cowboys home games a year.
Well, you know, the Buck and Aikman did two Cowboy games already, and then the other one was they were against the Giants. They were on Sunday Night Football. So they've already got – the Cowboys had already gotten three primo primo crews, so I guess they needed to take a break
back
off.
Back it off for this battle of 2-1-2 juggernauts.
Exactly.
Plus, Buck and Aikman will be on the call tonight, Thursday night, for those of you not listening on Thursday, for Vikings-Rams.
Good one.
All right, so it's pointed out, Dallas 1-2. They lose to Seattle. Very poorly played game, 24-13 on Sunday.
Yeah.
They beat the Giants in week two by only a touchdown. Giants don't look great.
No.
And in week one, they lost to the Panthers. Pretty hard-fought game in that one. And the Panthers aren't that bad.
Yeah, no, I have not been impressed with the Cowboys so far. They did not look good in Seattle at all. So they're coming off a offensive output that was pretty porous.
So head coach Jason Garrett, 2-2 versus the Lions, most famously being the head coach of the playoff win back in 2014. Hey, we know their offensive and defensive coordinators well.
We do.
One used to be our head coach, one used to be our offensive coordinator, Scott Linehan and Rod cartoon character Marinelli.
Now, Linehan is...
on the hot seat. So is Garrett.
Yeah.
So is everybody.
Well, yes, both of them. They're all really on the hot seat. And Linehan's on the hot seat right now where they're talking about Garrett taking over, even though Garrett said he wasn't going to this week. He said he might make some tweaks, but... this is a team that is putting up less than 14 points a game, and they're putting up just around 277 yards a game. To give you an idea, the Lions are putting up 24 points a game and 393 points a game. So we're talking 393 yards a game. Thank you. So we're talking about, you know, 2/3 of the production of what the Lions are doing right now. It's a very unique system because they're averaging 6 yards a carry, but they're averaging only 4.4 yards a catch. Very upside down in that situation that you should almost always have your catches average more than your rushes, but that's not the way it is. That speaks to how poor their passing yards are. Right now they're the worst passing offense in the league. 152 yards a game is pretty sad. So and when you flip that, we talked about the Lions defense being the number one. They're only allowing 145 a game. So it looks like they're the worst passing offense. We have the best passing defense. Those set up real well for us.
And so let's break down the players. We'll start at the quarterback position. Dak Prescott, who had a very impressive rookie year, but has tailed off ever since. His rookie year so impressive, it forced Tony Romo into the broadcast booth / trying to walk on to the PGA Tour.
Man, wouldn't it have been fun if Romo was in on this game?
I guess. I don't know. I don't have fond memories of Tony Romo. Not that he was a great quarterback, but he did beat the Lions in a playoff game.
No, I just think it would be interesting to see him break down what's going wrong with the Cowboys.
Oh, have him and Nance doing the game.
Correct.
All right, I got you. Him saying what they should have done.
Yes. And being wrong. I mean, look, Prescott's not... He hasn't thrown for more than 170 yards, right? We just talked about how his output is low right now. But he is a runner, and they will do some RPO with him. He will put up some yards on the ground, but his passing is really not successful right now.
And there's more reasons than just him. They don't have the greatest receiving core. We'll talk about that second. And second, we'll talk about the strength of their offense. Zeke Elliott right in that backfield.
Yeah, 275 rush yards is tied for the lead in the NFL. He had an average first couple of games, but his game against Seattle was very impressive, 127 yards. He's put a couple touchdowns up on the board. They run a lot of stretch zone. Now they've tried to get him involved in the passing game, but it hasn't been that successful. But they've really relied on him to be the kind of the horsepower. And so here's another matchup of opposites. The number one rusher in the league versus the worst rushing defense in the league. So I think it's pretty clear right off the bat.
They're
going to try and run the football, and the Lions are going to try and stop them. And that's really, on this side of the ball, that's probably where the battle lies.
All right. Wide receivers, Allen Hurns, Terrence Williams, Cole Beasley, with rookie third rounder Michael Gallup and Tavon Austin. Not the greatest group.
No, they've even used Deontay Thompson, who's a 29-year-old journeyman, and he's been outproducing Terrence Williams. Terrence Williams only has two catches the whole season. So they spread it around with Beasley and Gallup, and they use Austin kind of like the Lions use Tate in some certain situations, but None of them are really very good, and none of them are really going to break out the game. Like, Beasley leads the team with 12 catches on the year. You know what I mean? Like, that's not a big output.
He's just a little guy.
Right.
And he's not a good little guy.
And when you're – when so these weapons are not an arsenal. None of these guys would be in the starting and would even sniff the top three. All three of Galladay, Tate, and Jones dwarf every one of these guys.
All right. Even worse, their tight end situation. Jeff Swain, Blake Jarwin, Rico Gathers, and Dalton Schultz. Now, this is a bad group.
Yep.
Jason Witten in the Monday Night Football booth.
Yeah. You know, and Swain led their team in receptions last week with 5. Which was a career high for him. So
for only 47 yards.
Right. It's, again, this offense runs through Zeke.
Okay, now besides Zeke, their former strength used to be along the offensive line.
Yep.
From left to right, they go Tyron Smith, very good. Rookie second rounder Connor Williams, story's out.
Who's switching from left tackle to left guard this year?
Joe Looney, instead of Travis Frederick, of course, who's got the crazy disease.
Yep.
Zach Martin, one of the best in the game. And Lyle Collins, who fell far in his draft, but...
Undrafted.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he went all the way undrafted.
Yep.
But not a bad player.
No, he was actually a really good player in college, and he has, unfortunately, not really lived up to those expectations. This offensive line, again, used to be one of the best in the NFL.
Why did he fall?
His ex-girlfriend was killed, and the police were investigating
that.
That's
right.
They wanted to talk to him. He wasn't a suspect, but they wanted to talk to him to get information on his ex-girlfriend. But because the police wanted to talk to him and they weren't going to talk to him until Monday after the draft, no one touched him.
Yeah,
and he was obviously he was cleared. He had nothing to do with it, but because someone he knew was killed, it scared people away. Now, this team has given up 8 sacks, and right now that's 1 out of every 10 dropbacks. We talked about the Lions giving up a sack 1 out of every 50. They are giving up 1 out of every 10. It's 27th in the league. So if the Lions can scheme up some pressure, the opportunity can be there.
All right. We got a question from Dave Parker. He asks, how do the Lions stop/contain Zeke?
Yeah, it's really going to be about contain. They're really not going to stop him. And so containing him is the same thing that we saw against the Patriots. It's being gap sound and finding a way to get pressure from your linebackers. If you can get good coverage in your secondary, then you can force them into the run. And if you can bring 6 guys to try and stop them in the run game and they all hold their gaps, then you can start to contain Zeke. Now, he's a good enough player where he's still going to get his yards, but it's just you have to execute the way that you executed last week.
All right. Defensively for Rod Marinelli's Cowboys. Start with the edge rushers. DeMarcus Lawrence, who a lot of people wanted to see as a Lion this season. Tyrone Crawford, and well-known to a lot of fans in this area, Taco Charlton.
Yeah, they rotate through this whole defensive line about 8 different guys that have all seen over 20% of the snaps. So Lawrence is the guy who really dominates. He gets about 76% of the snaps. He has 2.5 sacks on the year. And he's really the main focus that the Lions are going to be honed in on. But they do have some talent with Crawford and Charlton. They also have Dorrance Armstrong and Randy Gregory. Randy Gregory is still an idiot. So he's still doing stupid stuff, and now that he's been cleared from all of his suspensions and he's back on the field again, he's still doing dumb stuff in the Seattle game. They stopped Seattle with like a couple seconds left on the clock in the half, and they were going to have to kick a 59-yard field goal, and the play's over. And everybody's walking to the sidelines, and he just hauls off and punches one of the offensive linemen in the face.
He was asking for it.
And he was literally standing there, and Gregory, right in front of the ref. I mean, the ref was literally in his hip pocket, and he just jacks him right in the face. They get a 15-yard penalty, and Seattle is now kicking a 45-yard field goal instead of a 60-yard field goal, and they make it, and they get an extra 3 points. So he's still an idiot. I mean, this guy, I have nothing good to say about him. He's a mess. But they play him because he's athletic. But, you know, it's Dallas, so what are you going to do?
All right. That doesn't seem like too much for Taylor Decker and Rick Wagner, but we'll see.
Lawrence is going to be a problem. The Lions are going to want a Wagner on him, I think.
All right. And the interior defensive line, we'll see a lot of Malik Collins and Daniel Ross.
Yeah, and David Irving's also in there. They just signed Caron Reed.
Yeah, we know him well.
Because they put Dayton Jones, another former Lion,
Lions on everywhere. IR.
But they're not as good up the middle as they are on the edges, that's for sure.
All right, next up, question from the Bood Abides, close to the Dude Abides. How does the Dallas front seven compare to what Detroit saw in New England last week?
So,
a bit better of edge rushers.
Yep, better edge rushers, and they're more of an attacking front, whereas New England is more of a gap sound front.
You'll see some wide nine out of Dallas.
We will, and that means we might compensate that with some tight ends in order to offset that pressure. They do very good pressure. 11 sacks on the year, that's second in the league. Again, we talk about Detroit's at 10. They're at 11, so that gets them a little higher. But in the Seattle game, the only way that I saw them generate pressure was when they blitzed. And they blitzed a lot, so they found ways to generate pressure. But, man, it took extra guys in order for them to get home. So if you bring extra guys against Detroit and the offensive line can hold, man, Stafford's just going to pick you apart. I mean, that's if we're basing it off what we've seen from Stafford in the past. So watch for the blitzes. The blitzes are really the key. But the big difference is they're looking to get upfield, kind of like the old Lions, whereas last week against the Patriots, it's kind of more like what the new Lions do, scheming that pressure.
All right, next question's from Jovan Willis. Will the Lions' offensive line be able to dominate the Cowboys' defensive line like they did with the Patriots?
I don't think they'll dominate them the way they did the Patriots because of the fact that it's an attacking front rather than a front.
They knew what the Patriots were going to
do. Well, and, you know, they practice against a Patriots-style defense all the time as well, which also helps. But I do think that this offensive line can handle them. We have to keep in mind, this is like we just talked about, this is a top five offensive line right now. And so as long as they're healthy, they do have a lot of athletic advantages that other offensive lines don't.
Okay, we'll move back to the linebackers. We got Jalen Smith. We would normally have Sean Lee in the middle, but he's out. And that's worth noting because apparently he's the greatest middle linebacker in the history of the game. Because they're, you know, fantastic when he plays and terrible when he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, Leighton Vander Esch will be playing in his place. A lot of people wanted to see the Lions draft that fellow.
Yep.
And finally, the third linebacker is Damian Wilson.
Yeah, but it's mostly going to be Vander Esch.
A lot of Vander Esch. A lot of zoom ins on him. They're going to be showing him a lot.
For sure.
A lot of zoom ins on Sean Lee on the sideline.
And one of the things that makes Sean Lee so impactful is that he is a very intelligent player and he plays intelligently, but he has massive problems as far as injuries go. He had an injured hamstring going into week two and they were concerned about that, and then he blew out his other hamstring, which is what's keeping him out of this game. So he's always hurt, which is why
they never golf again.
Well, it's why they drafted Vander Esch, because he's always hurt, but he is a very impactful guy. I think the differential between what they give up and with him and without him is like a 14-point differential. They give up 14 more points when he's not in the lineup than when he is. Like, he's that impactful of a middle linebacker. So, but you know, Smith and Vander Esch are good guys. They're attacking. They both have some athleticism. They're not as intelligent as Lee, but not many are. The big thing is that they've struggled in coverage a little bit. Jalen Smith has allowed every pass that's gone his way to be caught, except for one. And Vander Esch, I think, had 11 tackles on 33 snaps or something ridiculous like that. But he's a move forward type of guy. He's not a guy who retreats. So if the Lions are going to try and run, then you're going to draw these guys' attention. But if you can suck them up, there should be some spots in there behind them.
All right, Gary Luke, who do you see the Lions turning to in order to capitalize on Sean Lee's absence? Theo, Tate, someone else?
Yeah, no, Gary's right. I mean, Theo and Tate make the most sense because those are your guys who are going to try and get out in the slot and into space. But one of the things that the Lions have done recently is they've moved Golladay inside a lot in certain situations. And I think that they're going to try and use Golladay inside and try and carve up that middle of the linebackers as well, because I'm not sure that there's a guy on this defense that can really hang with Golladay other than their cornerback, Byron Jones.
All right. Speaking of Byron Jones, the Cowboys secondary includes him, Chidobe Awuzie, who was another Lions prospect at one point.
Yeah.
Jordan Lewis from Michigan. Yeah. Anthony Brown is the nickel man. Xavier Woods and Jeff Heath as the guys in the middle of the field.
Awuzie had an excellent rookie year. I mean, he looked phenomenal, but he has been getting chopped up this year. And so Awuzie will not be able to handle Kenny Golladay. They're going to have to put Jones on him. And the risk with putting Jones on Golladay is that you're going to leave Marvin Jones to Awuzie or Jordan Lewis. Now, both of those guys match up better on Marvin Jones than they do on Golladay, but it's still going to be a big task for them to try and shut down Jones. And when you're putting so much capital in these guys on the outside, again, it goes back to Gary's question, should give Golden Tate some opportunities that he wouldn't otherwise see.
All right, moving to the special teams, you're going to see Brett Maher doing the kicking, so don't be shocked when you don't see Dan Bailey out there.
Yeah.
He's with the Vikings now? He just signed with somebody, didn't he?
I don't know. Second most accurate kicker of all time, and they cut him.
And Chris Jones, the punter, also nameless, faceless guy. Yeah. Although 47.1 yards per kick, which is solid.
Yep.
And Jordan Lewis will be doing a lot of the kick and punt returning.
Yep. Nothing out of the ordinary. The big thing with the Lions is their coverage units have to be able to account for all this stuff.
All right, Kyle's question. With big performances from Kerryon and Ragnow this past week, what young players, not necessarily rookies, do you think is primed for a breakout game?
You know, from a skill position standpoint, it still seems like a game for Golladay. Like, if Marvin Jones starts to excel, then they're going to want to put Byron Jones on him, and then that's going to give Golladay a big advantage. Awuzie and Jordan Lewis are both in that 5'8", 5'9", range, and Galladay's 6'4". That's a huge advantage for him, and he understands how to use his body to gain leverage. So it'd be interesting to see how they match the corners up against the Lions' wide receivers, because Golladay could be in for another good day. On the interior, I still think Glasgow is an ascending player, and if Ragnow is ready to go, I think the two of them could handle the Dallas front, the interior front.
All right, now we're going to move on to our podcast questions portion. To the mailbag we go. Frankie Silverboys asks, has your win-loss totals changed since the Jets game from email?
No, me not really either. I mean, I expected them to win the first two and then lose to the Patriots, so I'm really only off by one. But I also thought Dallas might be a loss, and now I'm thinking they're probably going to win it against Dallas. So I think it's pretty much it's early enough that I think it's probably about the same.
Dustin Blackwell saw a headline on MLive, quote, Patriots call out Lions run plague, unquote. I know Jim Bob Cooter has been deservedly criticized for predictability, but isn't this notion getting out of hand? Calling out a run surely happens in every game.
Yeah, it does, and that's part of the film study. And especially in this game where both teams understand what each one does, it's something that's going to happen. Now, obviously, you don't want it to be as obvious, you know, where you're catching the audio on TV or something like that, like what happened on Sunday night. But you're talking one play out of 70 that they knew, and obviously there was a lot of other plays that they didn't know, because as we talked about earlier, Jim Cooter was setting them up for stuff. So the way that setting stuff up works is that the defense thinks they know what you're going to do, and then you do something different. So, yes, early in the game, they called out a toss on a third and long, and it was a toss on third and long. And then later, They zigged when the Patriots thought they were going to zag.
Next question's from the main man, main being referenced to here. Is Abdullah going to get a real shot at running behind this line, or is he just going to be a healthy scratch for the rest of the year? That's what I hope it is, healthy scratch.
It would mean, if he's a healthy scratch, it means that the other three are staying healthy. I thought for sure Abdullah would have some sort of role moving forward, but right now he looks almost purely like insurance. He's not really part of the game plans, and I don't see a scenario in which I could envision them going to him right now, because Kerryon has taken over such a large role so early. Blunt is their veteran, and Theo is so unique. So he's probably going to be a healthy scratch for a while.
All right. Saweta Patel and Sean Sweeney ask, elaborate on Hand's role going forward, especially in the upcoming game. And is he the Lions' best interior defensive lineman already?
It's possible he's their best interior. I think it's a little bit, maybe a little bit premature. Ricky Jean had some lights turn on for him last week. Williams has been okay. I think what we've seen out of Hand is 2 weeks in a row, Hand has led the interior defensive line in snaps. And that speaks to his development. So moving forward, I expect that to stay pretty high. His versatility to play both inside and out, and his success in when he is doing that, is really just going to get him more and more opportunities as the year goes on.
Colin Guy, is A'Shaun back from the grave? Hoping so. I'm rooting for him.
You know, I think so. I think his best game was obviously last game. He showed up. He found some gaps in the right spots. He closed behind guys when he needed to. I wrote earlier in the week in my takeaways that I think all that extra weight that we were talking about him putting on during the offseason in order to create a bigger anchor, I think was hindering him. And he looks slimmer. And I don't have anything to back it up other than just me looking at him, you know, right in the locker room a couple feet away from him, saying he doesn't quite look 322 anymore, which is what he's listed at. He looks closer to that 309. You know, 15 pounds might not seem a lot, but it can be significant when you are operating in such small spaces. So, yeah, I think he's on his way back up.
Toblerone Bone asks, if Patricia could build defensive tackle on Madden, what traits would he prioritize in that defensive tackle? I know he builds the scheme around the players, but just curious what his preference would be for defensive tackle. Would an undersized penetration guy like Donald even fit?
Yeah, Donald would be Hand spot. He would play where Ricky Jean and Hand are playing, and he would probably destroy people from that spot as well. Most guys are going to fit in this scheme. The biggest thing is that they need to be sound from an intelligent standpoint, and they need to be strong. And if you're going to build a guy that's ideal, it's probably going to be like Vince Wilfork. Vince Wilfork is probably the ideal Patriot, a former Patriot. You saw how well he did with them. He would probably be the ideal scheme fit from a defensive tackle standpoint. But you know, you can find guys that are a little bit lower in weight. You just got to put him in the right spots. Hand is a good example of that. At probably, just over 300 pounds.
All right, Arthur's question. Can we start talking about Agnew as a legit corner, please? We saw it in camp last year, and I've seen nothing to convince me otherwise. He's not just a return specialist, folks.
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, he is a dynamic return specialist, and all these penalties are really zapping his ability to be a good return specialist. But as far as defense, yeah, he's got the skills. I don't think he's an outside corner. We've talked about this before. I think he's mostly a nickel guy. But he can find success there. It's just a matter of getting him in the right matchup. So, yes, I think he is a legit corner. It's just about where you're going to use him and how you're going to utilize him. Could you put him on a Tavon Austin this week and just have him shadow? Absolutely. And I think he'd probably do okay with that. But the Lions have other guys and other bodies that they like to use in the slot depending on their situation moving forward. But, yeah, Agnew has the chops to play in the NFL at corner, that's for sure.
Lions 99 asks, Tabor, although active and playing special teams, was behind the top four cornerbacks in terms of playing time, Slay, Lawson, Shedd, and Agnew. After a rough week two and the signing of Shedd, do you think he's relegated as strictly a last resort cornerback for the foreseeable future?
No, I think this was schemed for him this week. Now, if you look at Shedd, when Seattle shut down Gronkowski, they did it with Shedd. And when the Lions looked at Shedd in the offseason, I think one of the reasons they looked at Shedd was they were looking at him as being a potential guy to shut down tight ends. Now, he played there with a corner a lot of the time, and he did a very good job, but I think that was schemed for him, an opportunity for him. When we go into a different setting, there might be opportunities for Tabor that where they favor Tabor over Shedd. You know, it's just going to depend on what's the matchup. I think Slay and Lawson are your 1-2, and I think Jamal Agnew is your 3. And then between Shedd and Tabor, it's just going to be depending on your opponent.
Maurice asks, does Glover Quinn still look like he lost a step, or is it a combination of him playing less snaps and him getting into the three flow of the game in limited reps?
You know what I think is, I think he does look like he's lost a step. And I think it was really significant in the Jets game. I think it was less significant in the previous two. And I think the snaps coincide with that. We saw around 60% of the snaps in the first game, but he's been 100% of the snaps the last two. I think he just was, he's kind of found his rhythm, and he's finding ways to adjust for that step that he's lost.
Finally, the last question's from Great Darkness, who likes the number 8. Who will be with the Lions the longest? I want to buy that person's jersey. Get the Color Rush one.
Well, who do you think it's going to be?
Well, I guess it's going to be Stafford. He'll probably be there forever. I don't know. I would say, like, you can get a Don Milbach jersey, but that might be retroactive. He might not have many years remaining.
You probably have 9 years of Stafford, at least.
Jeez. Yeah, he's going to be an old man hobbling around for this team.
But, I mean, like, if you're talking about guys that you think are going to be here long term, you've got 4 years.
It's going to be your long time. It's going to be 4 or 5 years for all of
these
guys.
Well, I mean, you've got four.
This is the average.
You've got 4 years with Kerryon, at least 3 more with Kenny. But Stafford is what this team is made of. He's your really only lock as far as moving forward. So
yeah, I mean, look at any other team.
Yeah,
you know, it's the quarterbacks wherever you go.
Yeah.
You know, like, you'll get this linebacker here or there that plays for a team for 10 years or whatever, but mm-hmm. I don't know, like, your odds on it's going to be Stafford.
Well, if they keep Kerryon, though, let's say they keep him.
Yeah, but is he going to play 7, 8 years?
I was going to say 9 because he's only 21.
Yeah, but that's going to be it. You're not going to see 16 years of him.
Yeah, I think Stafford's the guy. Give me a score.
All right. I think, you know what, I hate this because it's the classic trap game, but I don't like the Cowboys because they can't throw the ball, so they can't win in some type of shootout.
Okay.
So I don't want to do this. Lions 27-24. I don't like it, though. It's a classic trap game.
28-20. I think it's going to be the Lions. I think they have I don't think it's going to be as tight as you think. I think they'll be lucky to put up 20, to be honest.
Because Sunday's game was a classic Wayne Fonts game,
yeah,
where they, you know, just beat up on somebody they had absolutely no business doing, mm-hmm. and then they would lose to a team they certainly should beat the next week. And the trap game was always in play, and that's why I don't feel good about it. But
sure,
let's try to keep them on the hot streak. Let's try to build some positive energy.
Statistically, it just seems to me like they're going to have a hard time putting up points.
All right, who do we send out a special thanks to?
Oh, gosh, it's just a bunch of numbers and letters, but we appreciate these,
they're
right?
Bots. They're probably bots.
No.
No, have all the bots say we're great all they want. I'm fine with that.
So MTNZ63, so what Mountains 63 kind of looks like, that's a good one. And the other nice review we got was from JTE2214. So two nice reviews. We appreciate that. We had gone a couple weeks without them. We're making our way up towards the century mark, which is nice.
Yeah, we got to keep marching towards that 100.
And there's been a lot of nice things said on social media about us.
Yeah, wonderful.
We appreciate that
things
as well.
Yeah.
So hopefully we keep delivering the way that you guys want. And
thank all of you, real, not real. Anybody who's listening, we appreciate it. Mucho.
Absolutely.
So that's it. And you know, we're in a much better mood this week than we were last week. And hopefully we can keep that going into next week. And until that time, let's go Lions.